This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. How often do you think about your soap? Well, if you answered, not much, maybe you should. You see, a lot of what passes for soap in stores is technically not soap, according to the FDA's definition. It's full of lab-created chemicals and detergents because, well, it's cheaper to make. Now, what if you could buy natural soap made from natural ingredients like tallow, palm oil, coconut oil, and scented with essential oils, and for just a little more than you'd pay for grocery store soap? Sterling soap is 100% natural, and with a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne, there's a product and a scent for just about everybody. Check them out for yourself at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
What do a 35-foot-tall wooden monster, a monastery of Cistercian monks, and a forgotten 1940s football league have in common? Well, long before the luxury air-conditioned facilities, pro football teams bent over backwards, literally, to find the ultimate remote summer home. Today, we're digging up the wild history of the AAFC training camps with football archaeology founder Timothy Brown. Tim, welcome to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Look forward to chatting once again, and I would invite your listeners to sit back and listen to a tall tale.
To a tall tale. I think it's going to be like an all-American tall tale.
That's right.
All-American.
Every time there is.
That's right. Well, it's really all-American in this case because you wrote a tidbit recently called Standing Tall Among the AAFC Preseason Camps. That's the All-American Football Conference, if I'm not mistaken. And so we'd love to hear about this story.
Yeah. So just to set it up a little bit, there's, you know, preseason camp. I mean, there's a reason they call it training camp. And it's because people literally used to go camping during the preseason, you know, or they'd go out to some cottage or, you know, whatever it would be. But that all started like 1890s, you know, Eastern colleges and, you know, actually Nebraska was one of the first ones too. But they, you know, before the college opened, the team, you know, would go off to some, you know, camp along some river or go to some place where there's like cabins or whatever. But to get away, and it was kind of a whole thing of like training and training table early on was really a kind of a, it was like a Spartan existence. You know, you couldn't smoke, you couldn't have alcohol. There's some other things you were supposed to not do as well. And then, you know, a lot of teams had these kind of bizarre diets, kind of like, you know, we have all these bizarre dietary fads now. And then coaches and trainers had weird ideas like don't eat cauliflower or whatever. You know, there really were some kind of bizarre ideas. But, you know, so it was a way to get the team together, build a little camaraderie. But there wasn't really, you know, initially training camp was not about football. It was more about long walks, swimming, stretching out. You know, maybe they'd do some falling on the football drills. But it was, you know, a lot of times they didn't even bring a football out there. It's just all about, you know, kind of getting your body going again. Now, so the colleges did it, had training camp, you know, for 30 years or whatever. And then when the pros started doing it in the 1930s, so that, you know, by that time they're starting to make a little bit of money and they could, you know, maybe afford it a little bit. And, you know, at that time, the only pro teams were in the Northeast and the Midwest, and at least, you know, the NFL type teams. So they typically camped someplace that was cooler. So New York had a fair amount, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, you know, that's where people would try to go just to, there were lakes, there were cottages and cooler weather. Now hardly anybody, there's a, like Dallas is the only team that travels more than an hour away from their home stadium to have training.
They go to California, right? Dallas does?
Yeah. And, you know, because everybody else is all focused on, you know, stay in town. They got indoor training facilities or outdoor, but, you know, they got all their weight equipment, all their other training and medical and whatever, you know. So, and I can see it, that it makes sense. But you know, back in right after World War II, the AAFC got started. So their first season of play was 1946. And so it was one of those things where all of a sudden we've got eight new pro football teams, and they're all looking for a place to have training camp. And so some of them, like some of them planned to stay close to where they were based, but for some reason, like five of the eight ended up like in the Midwest, I'm sorry, in the Northwest or in California. Maybe that was to allow them to scrimmage a little bit, and they played some preseason games out there too. But they all, so they end up out there. So Bend, Oregon was one of the locations, and they hosted the Brooklyn Dodgers. And they had there was this competition among these towns trying to, how do we get one of these teams? And so Bend, Oregon guaranteed, $9,000 in gate receipts for, preseason scrimmages. They gave the team country club privileges at the local Bend Country Club or whatever it was out there. And then they also had like a discounted hotel and resort stays. Then you had the Buffalo Bison up in your neck of the woods. And they were supposed to train at St. Bonaventure, but then St. Bonaventure had so many veterans returning from the war that they didn't have, dormitory space, whatever. So then they said, okay, we're going to go. And they instead found a place in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. And I can pronounce that only because I grew up maybe 40 miles east of there.
I just heard you say it, and I don't think I can pronounce it.
Yeah. Well, I wrote it in the article, but there was a company that was based in New York City. And for some reason, they had like a branch in Oconomowoc, and no one could pronounce it. So they called it Wisconsin 5-0 instead of like Hawaii 5-0. But anyways, so they found a place that, some lumber baron or some guy who made a boatload of money from Chicago. He built this place on this lake outside of Oconomowoc. And then that eventually became like a seminary or a monk's, there are a bunch of monks living there. But apparently they had some extra space, maybe a shortage of monks. And so then so the Buffalo Bison ended up there for a year. And, and again, the city opened their arms and, gave them access to the high school training, high school field and the armory and, whatever. But kind of the key part of the story is the Chicago Rockets. So they spent the 46th preseason in Santa Rosa, California. But then Two Rivers, Wisconsin enticed them for the 47th season. And for those who don't know Two Rivers, it's about 40 miles southeast of Green Bay. So it's on Lake Michigan. I'm sure it's a pretty little town. I don't think I've ever been there. Maybe I've driven past it. But so they were all eager, and they had the Eagles had been there, like the Columbus Bulldogs. There'd been a couple of, teams that had trained there in the past. They're like, man, we gotta find a way to keep, attract additional teams and keep the Rockets. So what they did is they built this massive, they built a sign as you drive into town. And it had this big Chicago Rockets football player who was like 35 feet tall. And there was a local guy who kind of designed it. And his cousin was vacationing in town, who was an art teacher at a high school in Milwaukee. So he apparently did the artwork, which wasn't that great. There's an image of a postcard. They issued postcards showing this big, giant football player. And anyways, that's in the story itself. But despite their best efforts and the welcome sign and building the 35-foot Chicago Rocket football player, they left town after 1 year and instead went to Ripon, Wisconsin. So anyways, it's just, if you're trying to attract an NFL team or somebody else, having a sign, having a 35-foot player on the outskirts of town is probably not the secret. At least it wasn't back in 1947. So
It used to work for the Greeks and the Romans, I think. Then they build giant statues and Babylonians.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Well, it helped them win, that's for sure.
Yeah.
At least if you're a Trojan, that's one strategy.
Right. Well, that, I mean, that's something I guess we take for granted, you know, these, long distance training camps, like you said. But it really is a great time. I know high schools are still doing it, but they're, our local high schools do it just outside of town, but it gets the guys together and, gets them, like you said, thinking on the same page and becoming a team. You know, it's that team bonding session more than anything, but, you think about that and you pair that with a league that hasn't existed for, 70 some years since, really a cool story. And to hear, most people have never heard of the Chicago Rockets, and they were never very good. I don't know if they ever had a winning record those 4 years of the AFC, but they were one of the bottom dwellers, I think. But
it's a funny thing. Like even, when I was in college, we didn't have, we had the Milwaukee Bucks trained at our place, but there were the NFL, a lot of teams, trained in Wisconsin or Minnesota, or, I think upstate New York probably had a fair amount. And it was just like a normal thing. I mean, that's pretty much standard operating procedure. And then it has just disappeared. But, I'm not 100% sure. It just, maybe it's just, they just don't feel the need to get away and, haul all their equipment. And there's just too much stuff now, I think that must be it, but it can't be. I mean, people used to just fight over, getting a pro team there. Cause it was a, tourist attraction thing. It was got your town name in the newspaper, but
no more. I know that I went a couple years ago, PFRA had their convention down in Pittsburgh. And it was right at the same time we went to the La Trobe Museum because they had a big display on John Brailleur and the La Trobe Athletic Club. Well, that was the third day of the Steelers training camp. They go to St. Vincent College in La Trobe, which is about 45 minutes of east of Pittsburgh, basically. And so that was the first time I ever went to a pro training camp. And it was actually kind of cool, but they stay in the dorms there. The Steelers do. I think they're one of the rare ones that go to a college. I think the Bills might go to St. Bonaventure. You talked about the Bisons going there, but I think the Bills might still go to St. Bonnie's. That's kind of a neat thing. And I know they had an article last year with Aaron Rodgers going there. He had never experienced that before since he was in college. I'm sure the dorms aren't super nice like these guys are used to living, but in a room and up with somebody and it makes it real interesting.
I've got a kind of an internal, it was a playbook and then some like internal documents from like the 53 Colts, something like that. But there's, they always have these training rules and all those documents. And one of them during preseason camp, it basically was saying, stay away from the campus women. I forget exactly the wording, but it was a very clear message. Stay away.
Yeah.
We want to be able to come back, and they didn't want any concerns.
I don't think school's even in session at St. Vincent when the Steelers are down there, because they take, it's a pretty big thing now. It's they've got like 4 or 5 football fields there. They're named Art Rooney Field, and it's half that campus is centered around the Steelers, I think, now. Yeah. Probably they gave him a bunch of money too for it, but pretty interesting stuff. So yeah, this is a one of those unique things that you talk about that might not be common to the average football historian or fan or reader, but you take us back and you take us in these little nooks and crannies of football that make it such a special game, and you do this in your tidbits. And maybe you could share with the listeners where they too can take in some of your work.
Yeah, sure. Just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site, and you can either you can subscribe, in which case you'll get an email every time I publish something new, or you can follow, which means it'll pop up on your app on the Substack app, kind of similar to any social media platform. That's kind of the best thing. Otherwise, just, you know, bookmark it and come and visit whenever you feel like it.
All right, Tim. Well, we love it when you visit us each Tuesday, and we'd love to have you visit again next Tuesday to talk about some more great football history.
Very good. Look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.